Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents What to Ask the Person in the Mirror, Critical Questions for Becoming a More Effective Leader and Reaching Your Potential, by Robert S. Kaplan, narrated by Stephen Bowlby. Introduction. Great leadership is not about having all the answers. It is, more often, about having the courage to ask the critical questions. How do you go about improving your ability to be a more outstanding executive and leader? Is this something you can learn? Can leadership skills be taught? Are excellent leaders made or born? How do the great ones do it? Many people believe that great leaders are just blessed with a knack for having the right answers. They believe that these people have a natural instinct for knowing what to do in any given situation, how to stay on track, inspire employees to work toward a common goal, organize effectively, and drive their businesses. Superb leaders, they suspect, are born with certain talents, insight, and charisma that make them different from the rest of us. Of course, these excellent leaders are very sure of themselves because it comes so naturally to them. It is a pretty common notion. There is a rarefied species of successful leaders who follow an orderly path upward during their careers, consistently avoid significant setbacks, do not suffer periods of confusion, seldom feel like failures, and have an uncanny knack for looking around corners and seeing into the future. Sounds nice, but I don't think so. Over the past 25 years, first as a business executive and then as a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School, I've led several businesses and regularly advised a wide variety of senior executives and emerging leaders. I've certainly made my share of mistakes, and from them, gained greater insight into leadership approaches that tend to enhance executive effectiveness, as well as those practices that often undermine performance. In the course of these experiences, I have found that almost without exception, successful leaders go through significant periods of time in which they feel confused, discouraged, and unsure of themselves and their decisions. They feel as if they should be somewhere else, doing something else. They wonder why other executives seem to have an easier time doing their jobs. They go through wrenching phases in which they grasp for answers and feel fundamentally alone. Even as they project an air of confidence, they harbor deep feelings of uncertainty and apprehension. Many successful executives find it hard to believe that other successful peers are feeling this way. If that's true, they often ask me skeptically, then what's the difference between successful executives and those who are less successful? My answer? A key difference between those who reach their potential and those who don't is how they deal with these periods of confusion and uncertainty. The trick lies not in avoiding these difficult periods. It lies in knowing how to step back, diagnose, regroup, and move forward. Lonely at the top. Of course, this is far easier to describe than to accomplish. As executives become more senior, perhaps ultimately becoming chief executive of their organizations, it becomes far more difficult to get timely and constructive feedback, maintain an accurate self-perception, and develop early warning systems for emerging problems. At this point in your career, you have fewer, if any, superiors closely observing your behavior. As a result, the first time you're likely to hear a critique of your performance is during your year-end review with your boss, or if you're CEO, with your board of directors, or perhaps when your business experiences a visible setback. By that time, unfortunately, it may be too late to take the kinds of corrective actions that could prevent permanent damage to your business or to your career. The phrase "lonely at the top" is overused. It's a succinct and accurate way, though, to capture the dilemma I am describing. I've certainly experienced this difficult dilemma myself, and also observed it in other executives over the course of my career, and particularly since coming to Harvard. As a result of these experiences, I have come to believe that, for most leaders, 90% of the battle is being able to step back and take the time to ask the right questions. questions that help you figure out how to gain insight, regroup, and move forward. Asking the critical questions. Let me stress again that successful business leaders seldom have all the answers. Instead, they are very good at knowing how and when to ask the critical questions that help them frame issues, diagnose problems, and develop action plans, both for their companies and for themselves. In this way, these executives are able to work through adversity and get themselves and their companies back on track. In this book, I share my experiences in helping executives step back, diagnose their situations, and successfully move ahead. I've worked with numerous executives to develop and then internalize this mindset so that they ultimately own a tailored approach to inquiry that they continue to practice into the future, long after I've left the scene. Creating a menu of potential inquiry and creating a process whereby key questions can be framed and debated is a big part of what this book is all about. I strongly believe that executives need to pursue this approach in ways that are tailored to themselves and their stage of career, and also fit the particular needs of their industries and organizations. In the chapters that follow, I will provide numerous examples of how executives in a variety of contexts have gone about framing key questions and creating a process to address those challenges effectively. The central premise of this book is that by knowing how and when to ask critical questions, a young professional, as well as a senior leader, can take greater ownership of his or her organization and career. Asking the right questions in ways that frame key issues cogently is far more important than having all the answers. In fact, in my experience, if a leader asks the right questions and is open to a path of true inquiry, compelling insights tend to fall out as a matter of course. How many times has someone asked you a well-framed question that causes a light bulb to go off in your head? Sometimes just hearing and then thinking about the right question opens your mind and steers you in a new and constructive direction. The challenge, therefore, is twofold: framing the right questions and getting in the habit of regularly stepping back and asking them. What to ask the person in the mirror. I've distilled this approach down to 7 basic types of inquiry that, in my experience, resonate with both business and nonprofit leaders. In each of the following chapters, I present one of these sets of key questions and discuss different approaches to framing them and then answering them. Despite how firmly you may believe you know yourself and your organization, you may well find that it requires a surprising amount of additional inquiry and reflection to adequately address these issues. In addition, I think you'll find that these questions tend to build on one another. In other words, addressing the first set of questions should make it much easier for you to attack subsequent questions. The areas of focus, in sequence, are as follows: vision and priorities. This is the foundation of your enterprise. It is critical to have a clearly articulated vision and accompanying key priorities that are widely understood throughout your organization and by key constituencies. When a business is struggling, the problem often grows out of confusion regarding the vision and associated priorities. In this chapter, we will discuss vision, its importance, and how you might formulate or reformulate your vision. In addition, we will break down various aspects of how to identify a manageable list of priorities, which, in turn, will help you achieve your goals and aspirations. Managing your time. Do you know how you spend your time? Does it match your vision and key priorities? Often, well-intentioned leaders are not fully aware of the severe cost of a mismatch between how they spend their time and their top priorities. This chapter will address this mismatch and its costs and suggest specific ways to ensure that you actually spend your time with a more laser-like focus on your most important priorities. Giving and getting feedback. Once you've established a clear vision and priorities, effective coaching is a critical tool for achieving these objectives. While most leaders understand this, many still don't effectively coach their subordinates in order to ensure outstanding performance. In addition, many leaders fail to get the critical coaching that they themselves need in order to excel. In this chapter, I will discuss several pitfalls and misconceptions regarding talent management. We will also explore other critical issues and review several alternative approaches relating to coaching and being coached. Succession planning and delegation. Do you have a nucleus of talent that you are focused on developing? Are you deploying, coaching, and adding to that talent base in a manner that builds your enterprise? Are you consciously delegating key tasks to these professionals? This part of the book will address several central questions that leaders should ask in order to build and develop their human capital. We also discuss the critical importance of delegating certain tasks so that you have the bandwidth to focus your time on the most critical priorities of the enterprise. Evaluation and alignment. Does the design of your enterprise and your approach to leading still fit the needs of the business? Are you pursuing practices that worked at one time but urgently need to be updated, revised, or scrapped? How do you create the processes, emotional distance, and bandwidth to address these questions? We will address several of the toughest issues that leaders must face and effectively deal with if they are to achieve sustained success. The leader as role model. Your actions speak louder than your words. Are you fully aware of the messages you and your direct reports are sending with your behaviors? Do you and your subordinates say one thing, but contradict those messages by doing another? Many emerging leaders, and even some senior executives, fail to appreciate the impact of their actions on their subordinates and key constituencies. We will explore what it really means to be a role model and discuss the important questions leaders must address in order to be effective role models in their organizations. Reaching your potential. Do you know your own strengths, weaknesses, and passions? Do you foster a learning environment in which your subordinates can reach their potential? Do you encourage candid debate and work to create a culture in which justice and fairness prevail in your organization? If not, how are these drawbacks negatively affecting your firm and its performance? This chapter will explore how you can take ownership of knowing yourself, manage yourself in a manner that brings out your best, and create this mindset among your subordinates. I will suggest several specific techniques for making progress on these important matters. As you listen to each chapter, you will see that this approach is intended, first, to help you gain real insight into yourself and your organization. Longer term, and more important, it is intended to get you started on the path of regular inquiry, framing issues in productive ways, stepping back to gain insights, and then acting on those insights in order to successfully move forward. The final chapter of this book will talk about ways to make this approach a regular part of your leadership activities. The practice of inquiry and reflection. Several of the questions and approaches in this book are likely to strike a chord with you. Depending on your situation and experiences, others may not. On the basis of your preferences and leadership style, you might even develop a number of questions that speak to you more deeply than the ones in this book. The important thing is that you get into the habit of identifying a set of questions that fit your organization and industry, suit your personality and personal profile, and sync up with the reality of your situation. As you try this approach, I hope that you see it as a valuable tool, useful when you're feeling uncertain, or as a preemptive course check as you build your skill set, your career, and your company. My goal is to get you started on this path. I hope this mindset will allow you to better navigate the challenging and rewarding journey of becoming a more effective manager and a truly outstanding leader. Chapter 1. Vision and Priorities. If you know where you're going, it's a lot easier to get there. Have you developed a clear vision for your enterprise? Have you identified 3 to 5 key priorities to achieve that vision? Do you actively communicate this vision and associated key priorities to your organization? In order to understand a business or nonprofit and assess the challenges facing its leader, it is critically important to begin with the question, what is your vision for this enterprise? What do you hope to achieve in the years ahead? What is special about this organization? Why do you spend your precious time working at this firm? Can you communicate the vision clearly and effectively so that it is well understood by your employees and key stakeholders? In my experience, almost every sustained success enjoyed by an effective leader and his or her organization derives from a clearly articulated vision. A clear vision mobilizes your employees and communicates where you want to take the enterprise. It can create the motivation that your people need to get out of bed in the morning, come to work, and give it their best. Taking the time to carefully develop your vision and aspiration for your enterprise is critical to creating the foundation for building an outstanding business or nonprofit organization. As Yogi Berra is reputed to have said, if you know where you're going, it's a lot easier to get there. In business, where your time and other resources are scarce, you and your people had better know where you're going before making critical decisions. In this chapter, we will explore the critical importance of vision, review several specific examples, and discuss how a vision can be formulated and developed to provide a compelling beacon for your organization. Vision alone is not enough. It must be accompanied by the identification of a manageable number of key priorities. These priorities specify the critical tasks that must be accomplished in order to achieve the vision. I will suggest various approaches to defining these top priorities, making necessary trade-off decisions, and updating those choices on a regular basis. A vision and its associated priorities must be actively communicated. This chapter will address the importance of effective communication and over-communication of your vision and priorities so that your employees and other important stakeholders clearly understand where you're heading and where you want them to focus in order to achieve organizational objectives. Your vision and priorities should be adaptable and dynamic. Throughout this chapter, we will discuss the need to adapt the overall vision and priorities to your specific regions and business units, as well as the need to update the vision and crucial priorities to fit the continuing challenges of a changing world. What is a vision? A vision is a clear articulation of what you would like your enterprise to be if you succeed. When you look back 5 years from now, what would you like to be able to say that you've accomplished? What is your dream for this organization? For starters, a vision should be fundamentally based on a careful analysis and identification of your distinctive competencies. What are you truly great at? How are you differentiated from your competitors? The newly appointed CEO of a business that specialized in office products distribution was looking for ways to get off to a good start as she began her new role. The business had been in her family for 3 generations and was 100% owned by family members. When we first met, I asked her about the vision for the business. "Well, the office products business is a bit bland," she explained. "It doesn't really lend itself to visions and aspirations." "Well, it does sound like a commodity business," I responded. "So how do you differentiate yourself? Why would I buy office products from you versus someone else? What do you hope to achieve in this business?" She had a ready response. "First, we only sell to businesses and institutions, not individuals. We have a number of long-term relationships focused on the northeastern United States. We pride ourselves on offering a full product line so that our customers can use us as their one-stop source. We're not the lowest price option, but we are distinctive in terms of breadth of product offering, outstanding service, our ability to do rush orders, even if they're uneconomic at times, and our willingness to source unusual or custom requests." We take a lot of pride in being an indispensable backbone supplier of office products to our customers. What did her answer demonstrate? Over the decades, company leadership had made fundamental choices that defined this enterprise in a distinctive way. The company was designed to deliver on a well-defined value proposition, and this CEO and her colleagues were working hard to achieve that vision today. They took enormous pride in a job well done. After additional discussion about the future direction of the business, she concluded that it would be valuable to re-examine, update, and re-articulate the vision. This was particularly timely, given the fact that many of the company's employees had been with the firm for less than 3 years. In addition, several recent changes in the competitive landscape, if left unanswered, might threaten the sustainability of several of the company's distinctive competencies. She wanted to make sure that her employees were on the same page regarding where they were heading and what she wanted the company to achieve. More than just money. Employees, partners, and other constituents need an aspiration if they are to do and be their best. While it's true that money can be a great motivator for a while, I've observed that people eventually get burned out and lose their passion if money is their primary driver. The fact is, they need something more. They need something bigger than themselves to strive for. This may be building a great business, making a positive impact on the world, or simply contributing to an organization that is the very best at something. Human beings are social animals. They want to belong. They want to be part of an organization that has meaning and, by extension, helps give their lives meaning. Why do highly talented people with a multitude of attractive career options become federal prosecutors for relatively low compensation? Why do others choose to teach school? Why do still others join the military and put their lives on the line? The answer is compelling. They aspire to something that is bigger and more meaningful than financial reward. People want to be proud of what they do. Yes, they want to be rewarded, but they typically need other reasons to join up and stay with an organization. Otherwise, they'll treat it as a convenient stopping point on the way to something more meaningful. A clearly articulated aspiration gives you and your employees a reason to spring out of bed in the morning and, very often, go the extra mile. Achieving that aspiration gives people a deep kind of satisfaction, which serves as reinforcement in a number of important realms. What role does money play? Money is a byproduct of successfully achieving the vision. It creates incentives for the type of behaviors you want to encourage. If you do a superb job, money will follow. This is sometimes referred to as long-term greedy. Great organizations understand the pitfalls of taking the kinds of actions that generate near-term profits but undermine the reputation, character, and aspiration of the enterprise. On the other hand, they also understand that, in some cases, trade-offs need to be made in order to help build the franchise. For example, making a concession to a key customer who needs help is likely to sacrifice near-term profits, but it may very well help solidify a long-term relationship that is critical to building the franchise, leading to greater long-term profits and helping to realize the vision. Putting it into practice, the prism. A clear vision makes trade-off decisions much clearer. It conveys your reason for being. It shapes and influences every key decision that you make. It outlines what you will do and what you won't do. It is the essential prism through which significant decisions should be made. More specifically, it guides you and your people in determining which customers you will serve, what types of products, services to offer, whom you should hire, how you should organize and compensate, what type of culture you need to build, and what kinds of leadership styles you should embrace. Establishing this vision helps you make each of these critical decisions and focuses your employees on striving to accomplish your major goals. If you carefully observe great organizations, large and small, you'll notice that they are organized around a clear vision. You'll see the CEO and other key leaders confidently explaining what they will do and won't do, and why they make certain critical decisions the way they do. You will see confidence and passion in these explanations. You will see similar confidence, passion, and pride among their people. Their actions are guided by this vision. Typically, their success, and as mentioned earlier, the profits that they generate, are a byproduct of striving to achieve this vision. Conversely, in enterprises that are off track, you will often see confusion and uncertainty about the vision. They may have previously had a coherent set of aspirations, but due to poor leadership, changes in the environment, or other factors, they are no longer confident about where they're heading and what they're supposed to do. They wrestle with questions like these. Are we in business to serve clients with a particular set of high value-added products, or is it our primary goal to generate profits, even if that outcome is not in the best interests of our clients' customers? Do we still believe in innovation and new product development, or do quarterly profit pressures mean we need to suspend or de-emphasize this effort? Has the pressure to generate profits overridden a previously broadly understood vision about values and serving our customers and communities? It's my experience that when organizations are off track, they will stay confused until their leadership, sometimes spurred by an astute board of directors, pushes for a rearticulation of a clear vision based on distinctive competencies and core values. What's needed, in other words, is a compelling restatement of who we are and where we're going. Examples of the power of a clear vision. A clear vision is powerful. It mobilizes large groups of people. It inspires and motivates them, and it gives them clear direction. Let's look at some examples. I have a dream, advancing civil rights. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his most famous speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial on August 28, 1963. At Harvard, we often use this speech to demonstrate the power of a clearly articulated vision. King's masterful piece of oratory is remembered today as the I Have a Dream speech because he began several powerful paragraphs with that four-word phrase. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at a table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a desert state, sweltering with the heat of injustice and oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. A brilliant vision, brilliantly delivered. Other parts of the vision are not so often remembered, but were nevertheless integral. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence, King cautioned. He also made clear that the movement would need to develop alliances with white people and other various key constituencies. We cannot walk alone. At the same time, he stressed that while such alliances were critical, they had to support the vision. We must make the pledge that we shall march ahead. We cannot turn back. This vision was repeated countless times by King in numerous speeches he gave throughout the country. It also was translated by his key lieutenants and followers into specific initiatives and priorities, a subject that we will return to shortly. The ultimate result was something unthinkable at the time, the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and a fundamental change in the rights of minorities in the United States. Curing spinal cord injury, creating a center of excellence in spinal cord injury research. The Miami Project to Cure Paralysis was started in 1984 with a vision to cure spinal cord injury. At that time, very little research was being done on spinal cord injury, and the articulation of such a bold vision was considered audacious, even imprudent. The project's founder, Nick Bonaconti, believed that
sample complete. Ready to continue?